Well, there we have it. We are back in the saddle, or something.
You just brought up some PTSD for me.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize it was that time of month.
No. And still awkward after all these years. I had an old boss that would use that phrase. Well, there you have it. And as I'm now living in the South, and right, I know right. down here that they have a phrase down here in the South that is, oh bless your heart. You and right. I have covered this cultural
extensively,
phrase before.
Yeah. We did an episode about it, right?
Yep. And for those of you who were not around in those olden days, bless your heart means I want to kill you in South Code. And I became convinced that whenever he said, well, there you have it. That was his code for I don't want to talk to you right now. And I don't have any more words for this conversation with you. So I would really like you to leave. And I'm fairly certain that's what he meant. When you just said that, I just heard his voice in my head. Well, there you have it. Okay, I guess I'll go now.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah, and then now David is using that to.
Whoa, man! It's been so long. You're calling me Dave.
Yeah, no, I could never do that. It felt weird as soon as I said it. I'm like, oh no.
You know, people my ask heart me. Hurts. I might have talked about this on the show before, so feel free to cut it. But people ask me, can I call you Dave? I say, yes.
Really? They volunteer that.
I say, yes, you can, and it won't bother me, but I can't guarantee that I will know that you're talking to me.
Dave.
You could also call me Jeb, Ferdinand.
Yes.
Jim.
Dottie. No, that's a girl's name.
That is a girl's name. Wow. Yeah,
there's a lot of things you could call me, but I cannot guarantee success in our conversation. I get it. That makes sense.
So, canonically speaking, this might be a sidebar. It might be funny, so you might leave it in. It might be a funny sidebar. Like, what's that show? Night Court. I could be the bailiff.
Of all
Am I big
shows
enough to be the bailiff?
Of all shows to reference, you chose Night Court. It's just, did you actually... You were just a young lad when that show was on. So did you catch up on reruns? Is this a YouTube thing? I don't know.
It was on TV Land. I think I only ever saw like two episodes. Right. But I was trying to think, because it's a funny sidebar, and I was trying to think what like courtroom show is actually a comedy. And are there any other comedy courtroom shows?
Law and Order SVU. That's not a funny joke. I don't think so. Dear. Goodness. Oh, yeah, actually there is. It's I think it was on CBS. It had I am completely useless. The actor is in my head. I cannot remember his name. He's in I can't remember the other show that he's in. He plays a character named Red. Redding. Blacklist. And he starred in a show on CBS that was with William Shatner. Actually, William Shatner was nominated for an, but like it was lawyer based, but it was in there in the courtroom all the time. And I think it was a comedy. What is
this
name?
I think it was a drama. I never saw an episode of it, but I'm going to fight
seen
you on this.
Clips, I've seen clips of it.
Well, the problem is that William Shatner was in it. So if it was a drama, it was also a comedy.
Okay. I'm pretty sure it was a comedy.
All right.
Okay, well, let me...
Anyway, I am not tall enough to be the bailiff from Night Court. He is 6'8".
Okay, I am tempted to delete that entire sidebar of the sidebar.
Oh, yeah, we had sidebarception.
Yeah.
The top is still spinning.
Yeah, indeed, and it'll never stop because we'll never, ever get done with this show. This is case in point,
the sidebar,
today's episode.
The proximate sidebar, not the approximate sidebar, that I wanted to ask you about is this show... The bonus episode, or was the last show the bonus episode? Is
this
an episode?
The bonus episode. This is 149.5.
Okay, that's what we're doing right now. Okay, good to know.
Right now.
149.5. Okay, I had a reason for asking that, but I kind of got lost in our sidebars.
You start, okay, yeah, that's okay. Well, happy to help. Well, there you go. Was that a sufficient banter segment for you and I? I don't know, it doesn't feel like it.
Wait, so last episode or a half an episode ago. That's what this is where I was going with it. By the way, we're on my iPhone now. Can you tell?
That's my video. Yeah, actually I can. It does look different.
Yeah. So half an episode ago, you went out and you're like, I need to get something to drink, and you came back with what can I can only assume was a large amount of water and a small amount of whiskey. Yeah.
It was tea and whiskey.
I was close. And I was like, oh, I forgot that that was a thing. So for this episode, I did get ready. Jim, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking vitamin water.
Oh, okay.
I know, boring, right? You were expecting like, you know, it's just a fine French wine and tea from the Himalayas. I don't know what you want from me.
Well, I have water this time.
Okay,
very good. And I have vodka, kicking it old school. Remember vodka. Remember all the things you used to say about me?
That's drinking right. Vodka? Yeah. No, I believe there were never criticisms. I believe I was very impressed.
Right.
With the, I mean, it's like a New York gentleman kind of suave, cool guy thing to do.
I did live in New York once.
I would prefer that you drink that not in a Glencairn.
Yeah, I thought it would be ironic.
The Glencairn. Okay. So it was.
Plus, how else would you see it? Like, if I drink it out of like a large orange tumbler, like.
Well, it's not like I'm like a Tyrannosaurus Rex who can't see motion, or I can't see, you know, regular tumblers if you show them to me. Like, my vision cuts out.
Well, yeah, but it's just like this tiny little bit of liquid in the bottom of a very large orange tumbler.
Well, I orange. No, not a real tumbler.
Oh, like a glass tumbler.
Yeah, glass.
We'd have to find those. We're still moving in.
Still unpacking. Well, then all grace given to you. Grace upon grace to David McCookie.
Much appreciated. All right. Now, that was banter, I think.
That was so good. That was so good. Glad we're getting really good at this towards the end as we die off into the oblivion. Let's go ahead and get started with the show.
Okay.
Welcome to the Lightest Form of Flogging podcast, episode 149.5. That's right. We're going to do a little excursus, if you will, a sidebar, and not an inside baseball, a sidebar, Your Honor. Just a quick little half episode. The reason why we're doing this today is because last episode, 149 proper, 149 the older.
The integer.
This one's we meant to actually talk about our home buying experience. We never got to it, which is fine, you know. And so we decided we wanted to talk about that because this is a live episode. I'm gonna be real with you. This is a real episode.
Yeah, okay?
This is a legitimate episode. I have no clue what David's gonna tell me. He doesn't know what I'm gonna tell him.
We don't record these in advance. We record them as we record them. Literally,
yeah, we're doing this live. What I mean is, David, if you would listen to me.
I'm sorry, I was busy interrupting.
You and I have not planned really anything in advance of this. There's no outline.
No, but we had an idea. We have one idea.
Just an idea. Just the seed of an idea. And you and I are going to plant it, watch it grow, and consume the fruit of this tree that we're about to plant. And hopefully it won't kill us off. So that's what we're going to do. But before we get into that, let's do some follow-up here. I don't know if you have anything, David, but I do.
Already? I mean, I can't have listened to the episode because you haven't edited it.
But I remember what I said, and I kind of had something I wanted to follow up with you anyway, an update, if you will, of the Jim Briggs church search that I'm embarking on.
You texted me about this. Yes, this is exciting.
And yes, you and I talked briefly about some budding excitement on my end, and some curiosity. And some, not trepidation, but like, I wonder what happens next in that. This church claims that the leadership follows or subscribes to, they didn't use that word subscribes, and there's a lack. I can't remember how exactly it was worded, but like the teaching platform of this church is the 1689 London Baptist Confession. Second.
Blimey.
And all right, governor. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. It's very interesting. Very interesting, yeah. And I didn't say that.
Can you say that to them next time they bring it up?
Yeah. That's really interesting, yeah. You need to talk more about that, yeah? No,
it's like I'm not gonna do that anymore. Gay Christopher Walken.
Hey, hello.
I finally know who he is because I saw him on a show recently.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I don't know if he still a parody of himself. The gentleman is considerably older. I don't know if his voice is. I think the voice everyone parodies is like 1990s Christopher Walken.
We all sounded different in the 90s.
We did.
I sounded kind of like this.
Hey, let's do a podcast. That's as high as my voice can go. Anyways, I'm being sidetracked here. To the delight of our listeners who are sick of this, or they love it. And I thought this was interesting. And I wondered to what extent, you know, that cascaded down to the members or attenders of this church. And so Christy and I attended, and I thought overall the general experience was pretty positive. I sent my kids to youth group and had a discussion with the youth pastor. Talked to him on the phone and put him through a barrage.
So they have a youth
questions.
Pastor. Okay.
They do. They have a youth minister. So right now you can tell probably that you can probably tell where this is going. I don't know if you can or not.
I can't.
I can't. Okay, good.
I have consistently found it impossible to predict Baptist behavior.
I don't necessarily disagree.
That's why I set traps.
Okay. Yes, good.
I just need to keep you in your place.
For our betterment, to eventually turn us to the good side, to the light. I chatted with him and I kind of asked him.
Hold on, I need more vodka.
Hold on, Jim, please just pause, work with me. And I put him kind of through a series of questions, some pretty direct, and others just as a way to kind of get to the point, and not as a test, but to see, you know, what would happen to a member if they did A or if they did B. So basically he's explained that the 1689 thing is really only for the leadership, not the members. They are not required to even probably read this confession, let alone subscribe to it or claim fidelity to it. So that was one thing. So it's
fealty.
Fealty with love, cruelty with... I can't remember the line.
I don't either.
I know that movie very well. Anyways, So I asked him that. So that was kind of like my first clue. You don't really, no one is required to follow this and to follow that confession in any way, shape, or form. I don't think this is a confessional church, really. The members are required to adhere to a much smaller confession of faith. I don't even know if it's a paraphrase or a small summary. It seemed to me to be like a lot of other evangelical-ish statements of faith in that it was fairly brief. You know, and it covered just the main topics. It didn't really get into any great detail or serious detail. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of Reformed people could probably affirm this because it's just the lowest common denominator of a statement of faith. So I asked him about Sabbatarianism. So I said, to what extent would you require your members or encourage your members or teach your members to adhere to a Sabbatarian view as articulated in the London Baptist Convention? And he said they would not do so. They would not do that thing. and you are pretty much free to conduct your Lord's Day as you see fit.
Before I do anything, I look to see if that thing is confessional. And if it is, I do not do that thing.
Yeah, that's what they told me. I asked them about, Second Commandment. Mm-hmm. You know, would they be okay with those images? And they said yes. At this point, now I need not drink the whole ocean to know that it is salty at this point.
That seems like unwarranted extrapolation.
Go ahead.
So my question is, you asked the question, would you teach people to be Sabbatarian? My question is the leadership Sabbatarian? Like, do they believe, at least as for me in my house, we will not work on Sunday?
I did not ask that specific question. I thus highly suspect that the answer would be no.
Right, because you had this conversation. Wait, didn't? Oh no, this was a different church. I was going to say because you had this conversation at a Chick-fil-A on Sunday. Somehow they managed it.
I can't imagine that if they wouldn't teach or encourage their members to be Sabbatarians, why they, wouldn't be themselves.
Well, I've learned.
You know,
that,
I don't know. That would be weird to me.
I've learned how odd it is. How can I put this? I don't want to get too far down this rabbit hole, and I'm probably just going to make you angry. So get ready. But. Okay. I have learned to...
I'm just a messenger here, by the way, so don't get too crazy with me.
Okay. No. I'm just telling you, I feel like I've come to the conclusion that if a Baptist believes that something is wrong, there's only a 50-50 chance that they believe that it's wrong for me.
For you, what do you mean for me?
Who's me, David? I've been astonished. The obvious example of this, I've been astonished at how many Baptists don't think that I'm in sin for, if I were to have my children, future children, I have many that I'd like to have one day.
Yeah.
If I were to have them baptized, there are, and they're offended at the notion that I would think that they are in sin for not baptizing their children. So I've been surprised consistently. And I think, you know, this comes out of like, what do you think about the idea of Christian liberty? Like, what are your beliefs on that? And I think that the air that we breathe is generally this idea that like something can very definitely be sin for me, but not sin for you. That and so, like, I mean, I would argue that 1689 militates against this in its chapter on Christian liberty. And I actually have argued this with Ben Robin at one point. But the what I'm trying to say is, just because they don't teach their members to do that thing doesn't mean that the leadership is not convicted that they're held to that standard. That's all I'm trying to say.
I get you there. I don't necessarily think that would apply in this particular case, like from pastor to congregant. I think there might be a different dynamic there from Joe Schmo Baptist to Joe Schmo Presbyterian. I mean, the intimacy is gone. Well, obviously, the thrill is gone between... Between
the love is gone.
The love is gone.
Song from the Muppet Christmas Carol.
Yeah, it's not there. But that being said, I might have more vociferously disagreed with you like maybe 2 years ago on this. Would have felt immediate, acute, stress at that notion. I don't really disagree with you. However, I think I get it why they wouldn't, but well, they wouldn't necessarily think it's a sin for you, just for them personally. But for what it's worth, Mr. McCookie, I'm going to give you an example.
Go get my dad.
No. How is his dear heart doing? Is he doing well?
Oh, he is doing well. Yeah, he's about 85% recovered from open heart surgery that we talked about, like, I don't know,
7 years ago.
So maybe five episodes.
Yeah, he's feeling really good. He's getting close to his second, Jim. That's how long it's been since we've... let me give an example of where this may not apply, and it might show good growth or bad growth for me personally, and I want your approval. This is Jim attempting to get David's approval. So you know this insignificant, small-time filmmaker, I think his name is Les Lemfear. He made a couple of movies. Mm-hmm. You know, this big shot. No, I'm kidding. He's a big deal. His movies have been really cool. For any Agreed. Christian to watch. And he's making a third flick, as you would say, about the topic of cessation. I would not, Jim. Topic of cessationism. In fact, it's just literally called cessationist. I mean, it's a good example of a title getting really straight to the point, you know.
Right. Well, you have Calvinist. I think really the only creative one was Spirit and Truth. So.
Yeah, Spirit and Truth. Yeah, you're right. And that's his third topic. So his first topic was, you know, basically a 5-point Calvinist. Second topic was a regulative principle of worship. Third topic is cessationism. And he cares very deeply about this topic to the point where he's going to make a movie about it, which was, you know, I mean, I know that cessationists are certainly, there's certainly some passion on that side about this topic. I did not expect...
Although it is forbidden.
Yes. I did not... I did expect that one would go so as far as to make a movie out of it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, if you're going to go that far, that you definitely have some strong things to say.
Well, have you seen
The
Exorcist?
To devote the resources, I have.
It's literally the inverse of that.
Okay, good. I gather. Yeah, I can see how you made that leap from one to the other. I was a little surprised by that. Like, of all the topics remaining in Christendom, this is the one he picked. And I don't quite know how or the reason why, but I can only gather is he has a lot of things to say about it. And so I have a choice here. I have a choice. I could say, well, you know, I'm not a cessationist personally, but you know, this guy is, and I certainly want to hear him out, and you know, he makes good movies. He really gets his point across. The second movie at least convinced me of something I didn't expect to be convinced of. And by the way, they I asked them about regular principle of worship, and I kid you not, I don't think they know what that meant.
Oh my.
I had an elder and the youth pastor right in front of me, and I asked them about that, and I got blank looks. Anyways.
Well, I don't, I honestly never, so ruling elders, my expectations are usually relatively low just because they haven't been to seminary, and youth pastors, like relatively low in comparison to a pastor, right? Like,
okay.
I don't necessarily expect ruling elders to be able to answer all my theological questions. That's not really their, that's not their role. I mean, it's literally not their role to be able to teach and talk about those things as in the same way that ministers do. And then with youth pastors, like I have no idea. Like some churches send their youth pastors to seminary. Mm-hmm. I don't think most do. So I wouldn't. Gotcha. Yeah.
So that aside, I hear you. I don't disagree with you, so I'm not going to argue with you.
Is there a phone number written on your hand?
Yeah, no, there's a number.
Okay.
So what was I saying? Oh, so I'm kind of surprised at this, and I could take your tactic of our typical Baptist tactic, which is I believe it's the wrong position for me. But if you hold to that position, I'm not going to say anything about it. Or I mean, I will tell you why I disagree with you, but I'm not gonna break fellowship with you. I'm not gonna forbid you from podcasting with me. I could be friends with this person. I will read their systematic theologies. I will do a lot of things. But I got to tell you, and here it is. Here's the climax of this long, long thing. If I believe that non-cessationist position, the non-cessationist position or the continuationist position is the biblical one and it's the true one, then I have to think that the cessationist position is not biblical. And if I were to counsel someone on making a movie promoting that position, I would have to tell them no. Because I believe that this guy has a big platform and is going to have a lot of people to watch this flick. And thus, he is in a position of great influence. And will probably push people deeper into a position that I believe to be wrong. So, and I got to be honest with you, I believe that. I do. I'm opposed to this movie for those reasons. And I know that's probably not the most joyous thing for you to hear. But at the very least, you know, I'm trying to be an example of a person that's at least being consistent. And for what it's worth, I do kind of believe that with infant baptism. If you choose to pursue that practice, I believe that you are committing at least legalism, and that's no small thing, is it? But I don't believe that because I really want to get at you or say something bad about you or accuse you of sin. I kind of believe that because I have to, don't I? Can you at least give me that? Like I have to take some form of antagonism to these people that have positions that I disagree with, right? Now, I mean, if I could list the sins that I would accuse my brethren of, I don't think I would really want to put a lot of effort into finding all the infant Baptists or the paedo infant Baptists. That's not what it's called. The paedo Baptists of my in my Rolodex and just start accusing them of things. I'd probably be low on the list. But ultimately I have to admit that, you know what I mean?
No, so, I think that's good. I think,
oh, my leg is so asleep right now. Yeah. Keep going. Oh my goodness. Oh, hold on. I got to reposition my leg. Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry. Keep going.
Wow. That was awkward. No, I think that what's frustrating to me usually, like, I feel like when we have that understanding, when I have that understanding with somebody on some particular position, it really does free us up because we don't have to dance around what's clearly true about what we believe or what should be clearly true. And I feel like a lot of the people that I talk to don't understand that. They don't understand that the consequence of their position is that they think I'm in sin, and the consequence of my position is that I think they're in sin. And those are usually the most awkward and difficult and more likely to be, what's the word I'm looking for? Conflict, fraught, or like to not go well. I don't know how else to say this. Like,
well, let's test it real time. What are your reactions to? And I don't want to get into a debate here. That's not the purpose of the show. But like that revelation that I just gave you about the cessationist flick movie,
I feel like
film.
That frees us up to actually talk about it. I mean, not that I want to do that right now on the air with you, but like I feel like now that we both have that understanding of each other, it's not like you think I think I'm better than you. Like, I mean, you do, but you also think you're better than me. Like, that's
well, I for what's worth, that's not the terminology I would use.
Well, no, but you know what I mean. Like, like, what was that? Oh, so you said that's not the terminology. It's not the right terminology. But what I mean is like. I think that when you have this conversation with somebody who doesn't think that their position, like when I talk to a Baptist and the Baptist believes that what Baptists believe, and I tell them that, well, I'm a paedo-Baptist and I think that you ought to baptize your children. And they say, whoa, you say ought. I think you ought not. And I say, well, I think you ought. And they say, wait, do you mean by ought that I'm in sin for not doing it? And I say, yes. And then I say, you know, don't you mean by ought not that I'm in sin for doing it? And they say, no. Like, when we have that thing, all of a sudden now, they think that I'm judging them, right? Like, I'm the judgy one because I think they're in sin, but they don't think I'm in sin. Why don't they think I'm in sin? Because they're capable of complete cognitive dissonance, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose. But I don't want to accuse them of such things right now. There may be another legitimate reason. Sure. There may be a legitimate reason why that is.
Yes.
And I kind of, not that I'm like a new man about these issues. There's probably some cognitive dissonance I engage in to this day on some things. But I don't want to ascribe motives just yet.
Sure. And one of the things usually comes down to the perspicuity or the clarity of scripture, right? If you believe that the scriptures are not clear, should we baptize our children or not, then neither side is in sin because at the end of the day, if God says, oh, you were supposed to do this thing, you can say, well, you weren't clear. And everybody gets, you know, it's like grading on a curve, right? Yeah. And I don't think that anybody...
That person I will judge.
Right.
That
I don't think anybody would articulate that position. But what they'll say is, well, it's not clear. And then they'll leave it at that. And the implication there is that because it's unclear, neither side is in sin. And it's...
I mean, I guess you kind of just made the argument for them. I don't...
Not everybody, but...
I know, I got you. But I mean, that if they truly believe that, I can't fault them for not going after me.
Right.
I can just fault them
for not believing in the perspicuity of scripture.
Sure. You could, there we go. We can do that. Or mispronunciations of the word.
Right. Purposcacity.
Purposcacity. The perpiscuityness. all that to say, I don't have high hopes that this church will be a fairly rock solid 1689. Type of church. They will certainly not a Reformed Baptist church, but a Baptist church that says it's Reformed, and at least some of the leaders subscribe to some portion of the 1689. That's about as far as I can go.
Chapter 1, Article 2.
Sure. So there you go. That's my report, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, I feel like if I were in your shoes, I would have like maybe three questions that I would probably want to talk with. I don't know if they have multiple pastors or just the one, but the person who's seminary trained, one of them.
Yeah.
I would probably want to know, okay, what do you believe about worship? Like,
like to know that.
You know, do you believe that anything is allowed unless it's forbidden, or do you believe that we can only do what's commanded? Okay. I would want to know why do you say that you're 1689? Like,
okay.
I come from a church that is not 1689, that says they're Calvinist, but they wouldn't say they're 1689, but you say you are 1689.
Yeah.
What do you think separates you from them?
And
not even like I want to be pushy or anything, but I just want to understand, like, you're using a phrase. I thought you meant something by it. You don't mean that. So what do you mean by it?
Sure. Yeah. And that's probably the version that I will utilize when I ask them that.
Yeah. Right. And then, I mean,
was that too? I'm curious.
I thought I had three questions, but really almost everything hinges on those two questions in terms of, like, the first question is going to tell you a lot about what to expect from the worship, because you could be in a spot right now where they do what you think is required in the regulative principle. But in 3 months, they might decide, like, oh, gosh, you know, we've never had a really good dancer at our church before.
Yeah. You know, gosh, guys, we just haven't had one of those. You're right, right, Johnson.
And no, in 3 months. But I'm serious. Like, it could be a thing where in 3 months, because like what you have right now is unity because nothing has come up. But nothing has come up potentially for entirely pragmatic reasons.
Unity because nothing has come up. What a way to phrase it. Wow, I like that. It kind of happened to, I mean, that happens.
Right.
You know, it's, I call it in a much more crude, not crude, but elementary way. I always talk about, you know, make your decision after the honeymoon ends when it comes to a new church, because it's going to feel like, it's going to feel great at first, but the honeymoon's going to end and the real truth is going to come out and some things are going to start to bother you. And you're going to have to save your decision, or until then, at least.
Right. And I mean, what's nice about, I mean, this doesn't resolve the issue entirely. I don't mean to suggest that at all. But when you go to a church that is confessional, even if they have a list of caveats from the confession, you know what's going to come up and you know what their response is going to be to it, to a large, large, large number of issues.
Yeah.
That's what it means to have your cards on the table. But when you go to a church that has, instead of that, a doctrinal statement, you do have basically unity because nothing's come up. I mean, the church that I grew up in, they said nothing about Calvinism. And then I come out of the Calvinist closet and they're like, whoa, 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 what are you doing there, guy? And I'm like, well, the doctrinal statement says nothing about it. And they're like,
right,
yeah, but like, that's not what we believe. It's like, then why didn't you write it down? And we had unity because nothing came up. And then something
unity
came up.
And ambiguity. Love it.
Right. So what's nice about confessions, I think, in that regard, again, even if you have a list of seven caveats or whatever, what's nice about confessions is that it is so nailed down that people coming into the church, they know that, like, well, gee, if I'm a Mormon or if I'm a whatever, I know there's going to be problems here and I can just ask about it. Like, hey, is it okay if I read the Jesus storybook, children's Bible to my kids or whatever? Because you said, you know, this over here in this confession or in this caveat to the confession or whatever.
Yeah.
So what I would be looking for in your shoes is just, okay, you don't have a confession in the sense that I thought you did. Or, I mean, you might talk to the minister and he might say, yes, here's the 1689 and here's all the exceptions that we take. And that would be delightful. But he might be able to articulate them to you on the fly, even if there's not a list. But like, I would just be, I want that. I want as much of that certainty as I can get. You can't have all of it. Even in a strictly confessional church, you can't have all of it because like something could still come up. I mean, we found in the RPCNA back in the 90s, we had the Westminster Directory for Public Worship. It was the 90s. It was decades ago. We had the Westminster Directory for Public Worship, which defined what you can and can't do in worship. And it's the same one that was written in the 1600s. And then we had problems in our denomination of women coming up and leading the congregation in corporate prayer. And we were like, oh, shoot, we need to make some changes to our Directory for Public Worship. And we made it worse, not better. But that's a topic for another day.
Kettle of fish for another day is the proper phrase, David.
It's not a kettle and there are no fish. So I'm inclined to say you're wrong.
In episode 149.5, you challenged me finally. Took you this long to go after me on that.
Well, it's because you were correcting me. Before, it's just like, oh, well, Jim's doing a thing. But now you're making me look silly.
Okay, all right, yeah. I'm accusing you of sin on that. That's where I get fired up. Not cessationism, but kettle of fish. Yeah, all right, anyways. Well, last episode, we got far afield on this topic. I'm going to have to go ahead and stop it on this because we need to get to our topic. I want today to be a short episode. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I'll probably maybe comment further if any developments occur. And our final retrospective special show. So we'll do that when the time comes. So before I forgot
you want to start the show, I'm just kidding. We already did.
But what I forgot to do last week, David, was do a musical break. My beloved musical break. So we're gonna go ahead and take a quick musical break. We'll be right back.
Home is behind the world ahead, and there are many paths to tread.
He's going to sing the whole thing.
Through shadow. I wasn't, and then you said that.
Well, good. We're back in the saddle again, separate saddles. So, folks, we're going to go ahead and do just a quick little ditty, as Jim calls it. I'm honestly curious. I don't know if this is going to be like an interview-ish episode, an investigative. It's like in sales, we call them discovery calls, where we establish parameters, we learn about the goals and needs of the prospect before us. So maybe we'll do something like that. But I'm curious about our new station in life, which is we're both homeowners now. Mm. And for the most of the life of this podcast,
actually, my bank's a homeowner.
Oh, you're boy, howdy. Boy, have you looked at your amortization schedule? So the amount of interest you pay and you know, where it's weighted, usually
effectively,
it's,
yes.
And what did you do when you saw this amortization schedule? Like what was your physical reaction?
I think that a normal person would describe it as sadness.
Okay, sadness, yes. Other people have described it as sadness, I believe. My mortgage, my loan guy told me to not look at it.
Mm,
he just said, just do yourself a favor and don't look at it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I didn't. I looked at it and just thought, well, I'm going to do it anyway. But this is, I just dumped a huge mortgage payment and about $20, I don't know, is going towards my principal and the rest is going, it's just insane. Anyways, so David, I wanted to talk about this because years ago, back in the early life of the show, you and I, you know, in a humorous way, told each other that the only way we could get into home ownership is if the market crashed. And at the time, I think I was half serious.
Mm.
But I was kind of just, you know, joking, you know, at the time I was in a less, advantageous position to enter into this race. And you and I, you know, we just kind of laughed about that and had a moment together. It was very awkward. So we refused to have that moment.
We don't have moments anymore.
We don't, it's not the style of this show. But here we are, a couple years later and we're both part of that, that club now.
Mm-hmm,
where we bought a house.
There's and little sandwiches with toothpicks in them.
Yep, toothpicks. They're issued to you. When you open your door of your new house, they're just sitting there for you to eat. And it's just really weird. So we did that, but we certainly did not do it during a housing crash.
No.
We did not. We did not at all. We did it probably at the worst possible time. And let's talk about it. So I would like you to go first. Just tell me, and just a general story about how it began, what the process was like, and what you learned during it.
So I think I mentioned this last episode. It began with our landlords being incredibly unreasonable and telling us that we had to leave.
And the rats. Don't forget the rats.
There were mice. You know what? Let's go with rats. I like to editorialize on this show.
Might as well be. a huge rat ate Sarah. No, I'm kidding.
It took a chunk.
It tried. Just frightening enough.
So.
And then she fell down the stairs.
Yeah. So this is a good opportunity for me to talk about a mental model, Jim.
Oh, good. Yes.
I have.
A show distinctive.
I am consistently surprised by how unreasonable and selfish people can be.
Okay.
Surprised. Surprised but, as in like, I thought you were going to like, I don't expect everybody to behave like a Christian. Right.
Okay.
Especially non-Christians, but often Christians. But what I do expect is for people not to behave. You know the old expression that we talk about when we talk about total depravity. People are not as bad as they can possibly be. That's not what total depravity means.
Yep,
I'm consistently surprised by just how often I find myself wondering.
So like the limit just keeps like getting farther away from
right.
you. Like a
and so it's just like I mean, I think I explained on the last episode that our landlords were like, yeah, if you give us a month's notice or more, we won't charge you an early contract fee.
Right. Yeah.
And then they're like, actually, yeah, we will. After we make decisions based off of that. Yeah. Like,
I feel bad for you and Sarah that you had to go through that. I mean, I feel spoiled. I had a good landlord before I bought. And I never really had any problems. He was fine. He was fine. But yeah, I always feel so bad. But it's a common story. Like there's so many people I know that go through so much stuff with renting from bad landlords. I just feel bad for you guys. I'm sorry you had to go through that.
So we've just had in our lives over the last like 3 years, a lot of those experiences, not just with landlords, but with people that you have to work with, where it's like, I thought you were going to be a decent and reasonable person. Like, not like... morally perfect or anything like that, but just you weren't going to screw everybody over at every turn that you possibly could, even for 12 cents that you found on the sidewalk. Like there's like, okay, you're not going to steal my wallet, right? That's what you're expecting from most people or whatever. And then there's this other thing that's like, you're not going to see a quarter on the sidewalk and like knife the guy next to you so he doesn't get it first. And like, I'm just consistently surprised at how like you stole my wallet and you knifed the guy on the sidewalk. It's just, it's all the things. So,
oh boy,
real estate, you know, it's the most important decision you can ever make. So I believe in this thing, Jim, called the network of reasonable people.
Okay. I get it on its face.
And the well, if you get it on its face, then I'll just describe it for the listeners, and this will be weird podcasting. But the network of reasonable people is this
hasn't stopped us before.
This idea that like reasonable people, people tend to stick together. So if you find a reasonable person in one field, it can be relatively easy to get a recommendation from that person for what I would say is an adjacent field, right? Like I'm not going to ask a reasonable lawyer for a recommendation from a for a car mechanic necessarily, or maybe I will, I don't know, because they're just they're not that related. But I might ask a real estate agent for a recommendation for a mortgage officer.
Yeah,
right. So that's we have a church filled with reasonable people, as most Christians do.
Great,
Or should, I hope. And so we asked around, and there was a couple in our, they have actually moved away now, which is sad. We really like them, but there's a couple or a family in our congregation who said that they had used this real estate agent like 6 times over the last 10 years.
She
was great. Like she's been,
it's a solid endorsement. Helpful.
So we went to her, and really, I will just say that like the idea of walking through a process with somebody that you have good, like a process like this with somebody that you have good reason to trust, I cannot overstate how valuable that is. Yeah. Because, and she was a Christian too. So at various times she was like encouraging us, like not necessarily with the best of theology, but it was just helpful that she was encouraging us to trust God that he would help us find a place. Yeah. And she recommended our, the place that does our mortgage. So like all through it, I guess, the thing that we were most worried about was we had a deadline, right? Like we started looking in August. Yeah.
So it wasn't open-ended for you. You kind of had an end date imposed on you, sort of.
Well, I mean, we didn't want to have to move back into the basement of Sarah's so brother and sister.
Okay, so the clock wasn't the clock wasn't necessarily ticking. But
it's not like we would be homeless, but it was. Yeah.
But
we
there had was a some good pressure. Yet. Like we have to kind of, you know, we got to move on this.
And so that was the question, was like, will we? And I felt the pressure on both sides, because it's like, you know, there was a place that we liked. It was like the first place that we visited. We're like, this could work, but it had a lot of like, I found that it wasn't the case that we looked at bad houses. That's part of why you get a good real estate agent. Mm-hmm. It was the case that like, this is a good amount of space. It's well insulated, decent, you know, all the things that you would think you would want out of a house, but it's just arranged awkwardly for us.
Yeah.
You know, it would be ideal if this bedroom was bigger and the dining room wasn't big enough to, you know, to seat 17. Like, I don't know why you did that. Like, I don't need more square footage. I just need those square feet over there.
Okay. Can you do that? Is that something you guys do? No? Okay.
Well, technically, once you're a homeowner, you can.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
It's just a lot of work. So the biggest question.
Get the sledgehammer.
So I felt pressure on both sides. On the one hand, it felt like if we rushed, we could end up really missing out on something. And on the other hand, if we pass something up that we thought was acceptable, we could really miss out on something because it could be gone because, you know, in the snap of a finger.
Yes, very, very quickly.
It could be gone. So we're just really happy. I mean, honestly, that it worked out because we, over the course of about 3 or 4 weeks, we looked at, I would guess, 15 places, give or take.
Oh, wow. So from the start of your, when you started looking...
Yeah.
When you started looking from when you signed. Well, no, from when you started looking to when your offer was accepted. What was that time span? Approximately.
I don't think it was more than a month.
Oh, wow. That's really good.
Well, I mean, we had to move quickly, you know?
Well, I know, but still, I mean, that, in this buyer's market, well, it was buyer's market. Seller's market. you don't often have a great way to control kind of what happens,
right.
to put it lightly. So getting this all done in a month is actually really impressive. Not just because I'm comparing it to our experience, but I just know a lot of people that have been trying for months and months and months and still don't have a house because of a lot of various pressures on them. So that's really cool. How many offers did you make until one was accepted?
Exactly. Well, we made one and then I think we modified it, but the modification was literally like what the deadline was because they were both going to be working so really for 2 days. Basically one offer. Yeah.
David McCookie. This is crazy. That isn't the average,
right?
The average. You know what the average is?
No, I don't.
15.
Oh, wow.
In the seller's market era that lasted roughly it was like 2020 to 2022, roughly something like that, maybe 2021. Did you also notice and feel that and perceive that house prices just shot through the roof? And like you were thinking, man, if we just bought 2 years ago,
oh yeah, this house would be
so much cheaper.
The people who sold us our house, it went up in value. They were here for like 4 years and it went up in value like $120,000 in that 4 years.
Yeah. I would want to just vomit like profusely hearing you say that, but I know that's normal. I mean, that mm-hmm, is absolutely mm-hmm. insane. Absolutely insane. That it's similar to us. Ours went up like 70, 80-ish, something like that.
Yeah.
From 3 or 4 years ago. Which is just insane. So that's really good. So you made basically one offer. Do you know, like, I'm not going to ask why it only took one, but like, did you know, did your realtor say that you were up against a lot of other offers? Were you in like a tight kind of competition?
No.
Or was it more controlled?
This is what was interesting is we did the majority of our searching in late July to mid-August.
Okay.
And August is usually a little bit of a lull because everybody's going back to school.
Yeah.
And so it was a little bit of a lull. And I think that... I think we came in just as the interest rates, well, our interest rate is terrible because of this.
Ours isn't great either.
But we came in literally like the housing market, if you look at it now, it's dipping. Like not like, you know, whole percentage points or anything, but it was just going up and up and up and up, and now it's kind of leveling out. And so I think a lot of people were hesitant to buy, probably because they're smarter than we are.
Yep.
But every time that we've said, now's a bad time or whatever, it's proven that like, oh, not then would have been a great time. So we thought, okay.
Yeah. I can pinpoint exactly when that was for me. Okay. So did you, I have this question. How much of the home buying process did you learn and research and try and know before you went through this? Or was there a general feeling of, well, let's just figure this out as we go. Let's build the plane as we land or as we fly it. Which one of those was more accurate for you?
I wouldn't say that I know the process now.
Okay. Okay. Was that frustrating for you? Because there's a lot of in-house terms in the home buying world that I didn't know. Did it bother you that you didn't quite know fully what this process was? Like a term was thrown at you, you didn't quite understand it. Or the mortgage guy said, look, we're going to have to do this, 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 and this. And you're just like, well, I'm just going to do it because I want to get this house. But I don't necessarily know why we're doing this.
You know, I don't think it bothered me a little bit. But I don't think it bothered me as much as you might think it did. Because of the network of reasonable people.
Okay. All right.
Like, I am not a person who has to have control over every aspect of his life, except insofar as I would like to make sure that the aspects that I don't have time or the desire to have control over, mm-hmm. I trust somebody else to have that level of control.
Okay.
I don't make my own sausage.
Right. So I'm guessing that you felt better going through this process knowing that you had a solid person.
And the nice thing about this real estate agent was that she explained everything multiple times. It got a little bit annoying at times, but we felt like we understood what was going on.
Okay, great, great. So you're describing like, other than the circumstances that drove you to this reality, this home buying process seems to be pretty good.
Was it pleasant?
Okay, good. No, not at all. It was incredibly stressful because we kept fearing the entire time that we were going to end up living either in a basement or an Airbnb for 3 months or what have you.
Well, I feel you there because sometimes when these things fall through, you don't exactly know why or if they're going to happen because you get yourself so worked up. And you really, like, did you, when you saw this place, did you really, like, envision you and Sarah in the future little McCookielings living there and being happy there? Did you just, like, get to that point in your head, or was it just clinical? It's just the math worked, so that's good enough for me.
I think it helped that...
I'm getting yawn. Here we go. Yawn!
Customer yawn. I think it helped that they had all their stuff in it. I don't know if that makes sense, but it was hard to envision things because, like, you had an idea of how much space there was, but, like, the basement actually feels bigger now because it doesn't have all their crap in it. Like, you know how people are with basements.
Yeah.
And so, like, I wasn't even really able to envision, like, oh, this is what my office is going to look like. Mm-hmm. But I need to turn these questions around back on you, huh?
No, I'm just trying to I want to learn some things. Learn.
Okay.
And I'm guessing, like, there's just not a whole lot of digging in that is left because, like all your answers, like, yeah, it wasn't bad. It wasn't a bad process. I'm like, freaking A, man.
was your process bad?
Yes, it was awful.
How many did you look at?
But I'm glad this worked out well for you. So all in all, are you happy with your purchase? Are you happy with your house? Do you enjoy it? When you look at it, it just, like, makes you feel good.
Yes. The only complaint we have is that they didn't clean very well at all as they left. So
yeah, I feel that. Cool. Well, that's awesome. So yeah, I guess it's my turn now.
How many places did you look at then?
14.
Wow. Wait, that's how many you looked offers. At. How many, you made 14 offers. How many places did you look at?
Oh, sorry. Not that many. Christy flew down here.
Well, at least 14.
To look at a bunch of places, but we did, the houses that we've been on, we didn't always see it before we did it.
Oh, no.
Because we're so far away.
Is that this one? Is this one you didn't see?
No, this one we saw. Okay. This one we saw. And our realtor knew this and was very, very good at kind of advocating for us. She was also a Christian. And she did a really good job of just kind of helping us envision, because we weren't there, some of these houses. And really just, you know, went the extra mile to kind of, you know, she would say, even though she couldn't, I mean, real estate agents have to be careful with the reasons why they would not recommend a place. Mm-hmm. And she navigated that really well for us. And I think probably 3/4 of the houses that we bet on, I, like, really got invested in. Like, I really wanted that place. And when we were told no, we were just devastated. Towards the end, I got rid of that feeling. And I was just, you know, bidding on a house and trusting that it was going to work for us.
How many places did you rent before you bought?
1, 2, 3.
Okay.
In the Inland Northwest. The last house we were at, we lived in for about 15 years.
Right. I think that's, because I feel like we've rented, well, let me see. I've rented 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times in the last 10 years.
That's a lot. Goodness.
And Sarah's had a similar story. Obviously, a lot of those were together, but a lot of them weren't. And I just kind of learned very early on, you don't get your heart set on a place, even when you're just renting.
How can you not, though? I mean, like, how can you not?
Oh, it's easy.
Like,
you don't.
Thank you, David. But, like, you have to envision your kids in a room just to place them. Like, you know, well, our kids are going to fit here, here, and here, and this is where all our stuff is going to be. And we really like the neighborhood. And, here's a home. You know what it was? It was so hard to get one. And you probably weren't going to get it. That the prospect of getting one was just, like, extra special, I think. And so that kind of maybe contributed to our excitement for some of these places. But, like, you know, this place would really work for us. It absolutely would work. It has everything we need. It's a good price. But our realtor would commonly kind of advise us on what kind of level we would have to bid in order to actually get the place. And almost everyone was 10, 20 grand over.
That was not the case for us. That was one of the reasons that I think it was easier.
Yeah, I think this was what we got our place and we're bidding long before buyer's market started to tip towards buyers.
Right.
This was smack dab in the seller's market. They had all the power.
Yep.
All of it. and we
the high ground
that,
as it were.
That faith in humanity thing, we started to really lose our faith in the goodness of others when it came to the some sellers' behavior.
Yeah, yeah.
And the stuff they would demand and of us.
Mm-hmm.
In order to sweeten the pot, and we had lines. You know, we had red lines that we wouldn't cross.
Right,
but we had
no foot massages.
No, absolutely not. I don't know why I said it that way, but I did.
I don't either, and it got really weird when you did.
It's funnier when you say it that way.
Oh, okay.
But you know, if we made this, the stuff we would give up, I would just have to ask us, you know, or ask myself, could I live with this decision a year from now? Like, if I looked back and just thought this was the dumbest thing, you know, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't go past that line. So I'm comfortable with the bid we made for this place. We had to go, I think we had to go 21 over, and we weren't even the highest bid. Many of our bids, we were the highest, and we didn't get it because cash buyers just came out of the freaking woodwork.
Wow.
In this market, just they were everywhere. Our realtor was like, where are these people coming from? Mm. And these were just, you know, the institutional buyers, the corporate buyers that were just buying houses so they can rent at an exorbitant rate.
Right.
And they're all over the place because that's a cool closing process if you're a seller.
Sure.
And we were financing and, you know, not a huge amount of money down. But this stress was just ballooned because our mortgage guy was based in Washington State. And he was amazing. He's a President's Club level sales guy in his mortgage, in the mortgage business. Absolutely amazing. But he was not licensed in Texas. So he had to push us off to somebody in Texas. And it had to be round robin to someone in his company.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a very poor representative of the mortgage industry. Let me just tell you that. He did not appreciate the fact that I didn't know all the stuff that I would like to know in order to buy a house.
Mm.
And I would ask him these questions and it almost like it wouldn't compute for this guy. Like he, he wouldn't answer stuff. The stuff that I would ask, he just was like, why are you asking this? I was like, well, I'm asking this because I don't know. You know, there are just basic rules of human communication that I think I follow and that I think others should follow. Like if I don't know a thing, there may be a decent chance that I'm going to ask someone for that information so that I can then learn it, you know? Mm. And that is a weird concept to some people. So it was actually very difficult for us to work with our mortgage guy. Very, very, very difficult. But eventually Kirstie's looking at me because I'm shouting. She's just she's over there. She's like, is everything all right in here?
It's just David.
It's just David. I'm just talking to David. I'm yelling at him because he won't listen to me. So yeah, it was actually very difficult. And even when we started bidding, that's when the mortgage rates started to rise.
Mm,
so we started bidding in like January when the rates were really good. And then I'm just, you know, as each house was turned down or each bid was turned down, the interest rate is just going higher and higher and higher. And our debt to income ratio was just getting obliterated. The houses that we could have bid on in January, we couldn't bid on in March or April. So that was really, really, really super stressful just to see that our affordability just go into the toilet. Now.
Yeah, that rising interest rate number, it's crazy. Shocking how much that affects your monthly payment.
Unbelievable. The amount it affects. It's crazy.
Especially if you're not putting 20% down.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I can't do that, you know?
Right.
And all of the real estate people I talk with are like, well, why don't you just go ahead and do 20% down? That'll fix all your problems. I'm like, yes, thank you. Yes, I know. That
can you help me with that? Do you have several thousand dollars?
Do you have a wallet I could look at maybe or borrow? You know, is there a money tree that exists somewhere? Like I have the option. Like they think I'm getting upset. I shouldn't be. There's no reason to get upset,
dude. I didn't do this to you, Jim.
I know you didn't. But now, I hope it doesn't sound like I'm complaining. I'm like illustrating like the stress that the process was for us. Getting all of our bids turned down. Sometimes we were the highest bidder, but we would be turned down anyway. And then we finally got to this last house and I had lost almost all hope that it was going to work for us. I was thinking we were just going to rent down here and then find a house later.
Mm.
But we found the perfect house for our family. Absolutely perfect. The problem with us is that I have so many children that we need a lot of rooms. We need a lot of square footage, and it's far above the average. So there's not a lot of houses that just plain and simple, that there are a lot of houses fit us. The ones that do are, you know, kind of up there in price.
Well, and there's your, like, you just as an individual, your size as well.
Yeah. I have my own room.
Right.
You know?
Where do we put Jim? He's in his room.
Can I do a fat guy thing here? You know what I'm really super excited about?
It's not
going to
work on me, but go ahead.
I know. It's not like that. I'm just saying something that I'm excited about in this new house. I think you can actually guess it.
The size of the refrigerator?
No. Actually, it's much smaller, man. That's become a problem for us. We had to get another refrigerator.
I was going
to
say, you know, you can buy one.
Thank you. Yes, we did.
They make them.
They do. Can you guess what I was most excited about in this new house?
Based on the things you've said, the width of the doors?
You know what? David makes a funny joke when I cough. That's what I know. It's really funny. That's good. No, somewhat related. There are no stairs in this house. And now I am elated that I don't have to walk upstairs anymore. I'm so happy.
No basement either?
No, well, not in the south. There's not a lot of basements in the south because of the water issues.
Right.
So it's a
rancher.
Yeah, a rancher. It's like I live in a big rectangle, essentially.
And if you can make it happy, it's a Jolly Rancher.
Yay!
Nobody likes those.
No one likes those. I got happy about something. Dave was like, no one likes those. You realize that? No.
You can tell because when you have a candy bowl, people eat the candy, and you look at the candy bowl 3 days later, like at work, you know, somebody brings in a candy bowl or whatever.
Yeah,
it's just Jolly Ranchers.
The green apple Jolly Ranchers are just sitting there, and the blueberry ones too. So the house we found was absolutely perfect. It was for a good price.
Mm.
The value was really good for us. And we were not the highest bidder, but it was sold by seller or off. I can't remember what the phrase is, but the seller was selling it, not going through a real estate agent.
Mm-hmm.
And our realtor was able to kind of like develop a relationship with her and just let it slip that we were a family and we had young kids and
Baptist.
And I was excited. There were no stairs.
You have a podcast.
And she said, you know what? I want to give it to you guys. I like the fact that I will know that this house went to a family instead of somebody else, like a company, you know? So that really helped us out. And, by then our chances of getting the house dwindled because of the interest rates. So I had to really do a lot of finagling and, to make sure that the lending company knew my, you know, income currently and the potential and make sure they had all the documents. And then we eventually, I think we barely got this house.
Jim now moonlights in the moonlight.
Yeah, I do. So we're here. We did it. We have a brand new house in Texas. You have a brand new house in Colorado.
Yours is a house-shaped house, right? Like you're not attached to another house?
No, we actually bought a giant peach.
We're in a townhome, but.
Oh, nice. Okay, good.
Yeah, no fruit.
But still
here.
Great. Yeah. No fruit for this guy.
You live in a giant peach that is technically a Jolly Rancher when you're happy.
That is, yes. That is no stairs. So here we are. So you and I are now just, you know, schmucks that have to repair stuff. We bought this house knowing that there wasn't a lot of repair issues.
I was
going to
ask about that. You didn't get a fixer-upper.
No, we didn't. I wouldn't mind that.
Right.
But I was excited that there was a
handy?
Lot of new... Think of me as like a handyman enthusiast.
So you really, really like handymen. You collect them. You read reviews about handyman on the internet, but you're not one yourself.
Yeah, I have them. They're in my house. Here's Phil. Phil, come here. No.
He's letting me out.
Yes, thank you. Can I have some water? Because of YouTube, a guy can pretty much learn how to do most anything except plumbing. And I've used that to... Great advantage. So I like fixing stuff. I like figuring things out.
Okay, okay.
You know, I've repaired some tile, so I had to kind of figure out how to do flooring, which is a lot harder than I thought it was going to be.
Well, it depends on the flooring.
Indeed. But this one was a repair job.
Technically, if you just pour dirt down, that's floor.
This is technically a floor. It's a lot easier than you think it should be, Joe.
And the kids like it.
Yes, indeed.
Edible floor.
So not a lot of stuff for me. So that's been really great.
That's good.
Yeah, just we have a plumber had to come by, but that's it.
We have an unfinished basement.
Okay. Yeah.
And we hung a sheet from the ceiling over part of it to make it kind of nicer.
Chip and Joanna would be proud.
But aren't those the people from Twister?
No. No. The Magnolia Company, the Fixer Upper, the
Magnolia. They wrote In Christ Alone.
No, that's the Gettys. I think.
Those are the people who sell the photos online.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Yes. That's them. No. Well, that's. Do you have any plans for that basement there?
You know, we're not sure. So it's my office right now. Let me go ahead and turn on the lights for you. This won't be interesting to listeners at all. But here you go. Okay. You can see that's my laundry equipment in the background.
Yep. There's the pipe for the dryer.
We can zoom out.
Oh, so hey.
That's kind of.
That is an unfinished basement.
There, very David. Unfinished.
I'm glad you have a basement, though.
But cool. Yeah. So where was I without that? We're not sure. So I like the fact that it's unfinished personally, because like I like the idea of just being able to hang things. Like I want to get some sound dampening sheets,
right,
and hang them from the ceiling and just be able to like. I like the idea that I can just manipulate this place. Like, it's not nice.
Yeah, great.
And I can make it however nice I want it to be in whatever temporary ways I want it to be. In the long run, I mean, it's going to depend on how many kids we decide to have. It's going to depend on a bunch of, the amount of money that we have to throw at it. Yeah. I think it would be nice to get even if we don't divide it up. My hesitation is dividing it up because it's the full size of the house, but downstairs there's no walls.
Yeah.
Okay. And my hesitation is, you know, we're talking about like maybe putting in a bedroom or whatever, and none of it we can do right now. We're talking like 3-4 years from now, probably. But my hesitation with dividing it up is once you divide it up, you can't undivide it.
That's true.
The idea of putting in a ceiling, some walls, and some floor, okay, sure. Like taking the walls that already exist that are made of concrete and putting sheetrock over them, I'm fine with that, and we may eventually do that. But in terms of trying to decide like, oh, this is going to be a bedroom, this is going to be a bathroom, like all of that, I kind of like the fact that it's open space. I grew up, I'm 6'2", and I grew up in a double wide trailer.
Yeah.
And I've just spent a lot of my life having to like squeeze by things. And so the idea of a big open space that is where I work is kind of appealing.
You can make that work. Yeah. You can just go on Orthodox and figure out ways to kind of make that, you know, would it be a family space, a family area?
Well, yeah.
Or would you have children, you know, down there sleeping? For instance,
well, that's the question, right? Like, okay, we have a spare bedroom. We have two bedrooms right now. The second bedroom is being used as Sarah's office, but when we have kids, she won't need it as her office.
Sure.
And we can throw another desk down here if she's got work to do or whatever.
Cool. Yeah. Awesome.
But so that will become a kid's room, and we're thinking we want to be in this place 5 to 10 years. And so if we only have 2 or 3 kids, we can make that work for 5 or 10 years, no problem.
Yeah.
One bedroom, but. If A, we want to stay here longer, or B, we want to have more kids than that, we could find that, okay, well, now we have to partition the basement. And now, but I don't even know if that's going to be an option here just because I need a place to work. Like, that's just, David can't work nowhere. Yeah. I guess we could get like a co-working space, you know, where we rent a little office for me to work in off-site or something.
It's $100 a month usually.
Cheaper than a bigger mortgage on a bigger place.
Well, I know, but like if I'm fairly strapped in terms of money, so I can't devote any resources.
Right. Well, we can't do it now, but I don't know where we'll be in, 5 years when it's actually a question.
If it was affordable, I would actually do something like that because I don't like working from home. And even though we got a huge house, there's really no functional place for me to be.
You know what great place to work is? Well, I don't know. I don't know what your requirements are on the phone, but if you have like a good stretch of like 3 or 4 hours, we've been going to the library.
I go to my local library a lot.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, minus the homeless people who seem to come in on Thursdays. we like to go there one day a week for half the day.
I live in a very small town, and it hasn't been a problem for me, so I'm pretty excited about that. But I guess
very,
it's not
very small homeless people. You can barely see them.
Hey, I can't do a high voice. I found a solution that I thought was kind of genius, actually. My office, when I am here, is actually in my garage.
Oh, there you go.
It's the best office. It's a double garage? Yeah, it's a double garage.
That makes sense.
And it's just the best office I ever had. I love it. Right. Great. By a window. It's kind of private-ish. Kids come in and out, but it's not. It's so much better than where I used to be.
The laundry room with all the whiskey.
But it was a horrible place to work. And here I was actually in our kitchen because our computer is there in the kitchen. It's a big kitchen, and we just have a desk on one end. And we had the family computer there, and I just was right next to it, and it was just awful place for me to be. But anyways, so we're way past the point of being interesting to anybody. But to that end, we have one more episode to go, our retrospective, which we will be releasing for you next week. So I hope you all enjoy that. It will be our final episode. We're going to be ending this thing that we've been enjoying for so long, for so many years. And hopefully you have too. So that's all I got for you. David, thank you for your time. And we'll see everybody later. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Won't someone save me from this podcast? Is it over or just drag? Started off so tongue-in-cheek. Now it seems it's almost over. So I